All right, we're beginning here on the top of Yudchet Amun Aleph, 8 lines down. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. B'shlosha mikomot hachu b'chachamim achar rov, basum kevadai. There are 3 locations where the chachamim said that even though it's only a rov, we treat it like a vadai. We no longer treat it like a safek. We treat it as if it's absolute in nature. The difference would be with regards to tumah. If you have something that's a safek, then we say tolin. We wait and see. You're not allowed to eat it. You can't burn it yet. We let it get exposed to other tumah before we do anything with it. We wait for it to spoil. Over here, if you think it's vadai, then you can burn it right away if it's, for instance, tumah tumeyah. So here we treat it like a vadai. The Tosafot Rosh over here says, the chiddush in Rabbi Yochanan is, afilu ika miuta. Even though there is a miut, obviously, if it's a robe, there's a majority going in a certain direction, there's a minority that is counterbalancing that. But also, there is also a chazoka. There's a cheskat tahara, and there's a miut. If you put those together, it would have then possibly undermined the robe. And even though we have a shita to Rabbi Meir, who is choshesh the miuta, and when he does that, he puts it together with the chazoka, and says that that mitigates the rove. Nevertheless, in these instances, he's mode, delo amrinan samuch miyuta lechazoka, that we don't say that, and we do not apply that principle. We're going to see that later in today's daf, that Rabbi Meir is going to take a miyut, the minority, and a chazoka, and say that's enough to offset the rove. So what the Tosafot Rosh is suggesting in these instances, even according to Rabbi Meir, even though it's a miyut, we ignore the miut completely, and the rove governs in these cases, irrespective of the fact that there is a miut and a chazaka against it. That's the way that he explains the chiddush of Rabbi Yochanan. And Rashi says over here that the chiddush over here is mishum da'azlinan bataruba, that we go after the rove, despite the fact that these roves have something a little bit amiss about them, something that's a little weaker than you wouldn't have expected. They're an unusual case. They're an outlier situation. So despite the fact that these aren't a robe that you'd find necessarily in most circumstances, or it's not a robe that comes about all the time, nevertheless, we still treat it like a robe that has power to be machriya, that in this situation, the din is like the robe. So the 3 are mikor, shilya, and chatikha. Those are the 3 instances. Mikor, the coming from the uterus, hada amran. That's our case over here. And that's what we just learned about previously about the anatomy of the woman, whether we suspect whether the dam that's coming through the prusdor came from the cheder, did it come from the uterus, or did it come from the aliyah, did it come from the urinary bladder, the urinary tract. And over there, that we said in the Mishnah, cheskatolo baila min makor, that we said in the Mishnah that the chazoka is that the blood that's found in the prusdor came from the mekor, in like the way that Rabbi Chiya explained it yesterday, which is dama nimtza prusdor chayelim and alav bebiat mikdash v'sorfim alav et truma, that Rabbi Chiya treats it as if it's a vadai, and therefore if you're a tamei and you go into the mikdash, or you eat truma, or a truma becomes tameah from it, you would burn the truma. He treats it like a vadai. And he follows this idea, as Rashi is saying over here, that there is a chazoka, that the blood comes from the cheder, because that's where the rove, the majority of blood, comes from the uterus, not from the urinary tract, at least in the area of the lul and bifnim. Based on that, we're going to assume it's kivadai, as if it is fully tamei. The shilya is a placenta. It's not shilya b'bayit. We have a placenta in the house, habayit tamei. We assume that the bayit is fully tamei. Below, shashil yavlad. Not because the placenta itself is a birth, ela she'en shil ya below vlad, but because there's no placenta without a vlad. If you have a miscarriage, the miscarriage results in the birth of a non-viable entity. That non-viable entity, if it's far enough along in the pregnancy, has consideration like a human being. That means if it's a leida, then it's a human that is considered like a cadaver being in the house. And if that's the case, then you have tumat ohel betoch the bayit, because you had a birth, you had an entity that existed in the house. Now, even though it's not a viable entity, nevertheless, we assume that it was an entity that has enough shape and form to it that it's considered like a human being. And once that's the case, it's mitamei bohel. Rabbi Shimon Omer, nimoka blad ad lo yatsa. Rabbi Shimon says that the blood dissolved or was crushed before it came out. So now the Mishnah is telling us, well, there is a suffix over here, as Rashi says over here, even though there is a niut of placentas that do exit without having a blood, nevertheless, because the rove of placentas exit and have a blood, we assume here that it's like a vadai, that there was a blood. And again, even though there is a mute that it's not a vlad, we treat it like it's vadai tmeya in that case. And then we have Rabbi Shimon who adds on that assume here that the vlad dissolved. And after it dissolved, it was overcome by the amount of dam that was exiting. And the dam that exited is not a vlad. And it's batel berov. And there is no din of vlad over here. That's the view of Rabbi Shimon. Obviously, we're following the position of the Chachamim. And according to Rashi, the rove here is that rove placentas exit with a vlad, and we're treating it like a vadai, as if for sure a vlad exited. The Baalei Tosafot are not so settled with that view, even though they help explain Rashi's view in the face of questions from other places. But nevertheless, they say, v'nira lefaresh, dein shli yaklal below vlad. He takes it as an absolute, that there is no such thing as a placenta without a vlad. Ach, miuta nimok. But the problem is that sometimes there's a mute, a minority of them that dissolve or get ruined before they exit. Ruban eni mukim, achetze de beit achitzon. The others that get dissolved or crushed or lose their form only happens once already exited the uterus. So if it already dissolved or was ruined before it left the uterus, then it would not be mitamei because it would be overwhelmed by the dam and everything that's in the uterus. And then when it was flushed out, it would be batel berov and it would have no impact. On the other hand, if that only happened after it exited the uterus, then it was crushed, dissolved, or whatever happened to it, at that point it's already considered a leida. It was already born. It's already outside the woman. If that's the case, then it would be tamei. So Tosafot says, guaranteed that if you have a placenta here, you also have a vlad. So then why is it a robe? Robe deals with the shape of the, or the form of what is being born here. What is being born is a dissolved or liquid and we can't see any form of a vlad at all. But we know there's a vlad there. Our only question is, when did that vlad dissolve or when did that vlad get ruined? If it got ruined internally while it was still in the uterus, then it's batel. But that's the minority of those situations. Majority of situations where a vlad or something that shape loses its shape or form is already after it's left the uterus. Since that's the majority of where it happens, that's already deemed a birth. And there's tuma before we had ever got dissolved. There was batel berov. If that's the case, then we're tamei. There's a miut. We ignore the miut over here. We say the robe is kivadai. So that's how the Baalei Tosafot explain the robe over here versus Rashi's explanation of the robe over here. And the Tosafot then asks, why did the Gemara bring the Sefer of the Mishnah? There is a Reshit to this Mishnah, which would have been equally good proof to what we're looking for in terms of what Rabbi Yochanan was suggesting. And Tosafot here gives a number of answers, and then he says, "Ketzat Nira, Dabar Abba Reisha Samich." Truth is that the Gemara was relying on the Reisha, and that's really what they wanted to bring. The Sefer Lomaiti El Mishum Deminah Mochiach, the time of the Rabbana Mishum Ruba. But the reason they brought the Seifa is to show you the reasoning behind the Rabbanon's position is because of Rove. Rabbi Shimon Sita is Nimoka Blad Achlo Yatsa, which means Rabbi Shimon believes that Rove of them are Nimokim, and the Rabbanon argue. And Tosafot says that we wouldn't suggest that the Rabbanon's position is so far away from Rabbi Shimon that they say any Nimokim, that they'd say that nothing is Nimok. Ella, they have to say that it's a Miut that is Nimok, so that there's not such a big gap between the sheet of Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim. Can't say that the Chachamim say that Vadai Einam Nimokim, and Rabbi Shimon says Rubam Nimokim. That's too much distance between their opinions. And so therefore, according to Rabbi Shimon, if he says Rob Nimokim, the Chachamim have to believe at least Miut Nimokim. And from that, we then can garner the position of the Chachamim. That's why the Gemara brought the Seifa and not the Reisha. And then after that, the Baalei Tosafot suggests that maybe the Gemara is really relying on the ratio of that Mishnah, because the ratio of the Mishnah doesn't include the word bayit. And in the Sefer of the Mishnah, the word bayit would then render all of this meaningless, because bayit is reshuta yachid, and safek tumah reshuta yachid is tamei, and then you wouldn't need any of the other reasons. And therefore, he says that the reason that the Gemara brought the Seifa is to teach us contrast to Rabbi Shimon, that it's Ruva Nimukim, which means the Chachamim think Miut Nimukim. But had you just had all of that, you could have just said, Sfesavik Tumah Bishut Yachid is Tameh. And therefore, the Gemara is implicitly relying on the Reisha, where there is no word Bayit, which indicates this is even true, Bishut Arabim. If it's true in Bishut Arabim, then you must be relying on Rov, and not relying on Safek Tumah Bishut Yachid is Tameh. Alright, then, the third one is Chaticha, which is the Tanya with a Braita. Mepelet Yad Chatucha, Viregel Chatucha. A woman who miscarries and discharges either an arm that has Chatucha means that it's formed or developed. It means that they have shapes of fingers in it. Or, same thing if she was a Regel, Chatucha, it already has toes or it has some shape in it. That gives you an indication that it was that limb that was discharged. So then, imot me'at leida. You assume that the mother gave birth to an entity, and she is tumat leida. Bein choshishim shemem iguf atum ba'a. And we don't worry that maybe it came from an unformed fetus. Because if it came from an unformed fetus, it'd be too early on in the pregnancy, and it would not be classified as tumat leida. But the evidence from these hand and leg that was discharged, we assume that a la robe, if you get something of that shape that's being discharged, that the fetus was far enough along or well enough developed that it considered a leida. And so then we follow the robe here and say vadai that she gave birth. The only thing we don't know is whether she gave birth to a zachar and a nekeva. She'll have to keep me safek 2 weeks of tuma in case it was a nekeva. And then only 33 days of tara, 7 of which already were used up by the second week of tuma. That means you only have 26 days of Tara left. You'll take the Chumrot of an Akeva, Chumrot of a Zachar, and apply it to her. So she'll have a Leida Vadait, but Safek Zachar, Safek Nekeva. What we don't consider is the possibility that there was no Leida whatsoever. And you see from there again that even though it's only a Rove, that it comes from a full developed fetus, and not from a Gufatum, nevertheless we treat it like a Vadai. It says, Betuleka, aren't there other situations in which we treat the robe like a vadai? Ba'ika teisha chaniyot, the 9 stores. This is your classic situation that the Gemara brings in order to demonstrate the differences within robe. And that is the Tanya. Teisha chaniyot kulam mochrot basar shkuta. You have 9 stores that are selling kosher meat. Bachat mochert basar nevela. And one of them selling non-kosher meat. Ba'kach me'achat mehen. And you purchased from one of them. Ve'en yodeh me'ezem lakach. We don't know from which one it was purchased. Sfeiko asur. Over there, the sfeik is asur. This is what's known in the halacha as kol de kavua kemechsa mechsa dami. Anything that comes from a fixed location or a fixed situation, we treat it like 50-50. So over here, since you definitely entered one of the stores and you bought the meat from a store where meat is sold, that's called kavua. And since the sfeik developed in something that doesn't move, that is something that is fixed in place, we assume there that the purchase was done on a 50-50 basis. It could be non-kosher, it could be kosher. And since we don't know, it remains a safek of 50-50. On the other hand, umunimtsa, if you find it later on, according to Rashi or Bakarko, you find it on the ground, at that point, we assume halech achar harov. We follow the rov, the majority of stores. Since the majority of stores are kosher stores, we say kol de parish, mi ruba kol parish. Anything that leaves or is separated away from a grouping, we assume that it is probability-wise coming from the rove or whatever is in that sample pool. So here, the sample pool includes 9 kosher butcher stores and 1 non-kosher butcher store. You find meat on the ground outside. So that meat, we're going to assume, came from a kosher store because called the parish, something that separates away, mi ruba ka parish. And the rove of stores are kosher stores. Therefore, the probability is high that this meat came from a kosher store. Tosafot adds the dimension that this is a case where, even though it is karov, it's closer to the non-kosher store. Even though you find the meat closer to the non-kosher store, we still follow rov. And that means that when you have rov, vikarov, we follow the rov over karov. That the adjacency to something is not a governing factor, and rove is a better determinant. So here, even though it's closer to the non-kosher butcher store, since the majority of stores are kosher, we follow that it is, or we assume that it is kosher meat over here. Tosafot then goes on to point out that we have a statement from Chanina and Baba Batra, the Rov and Karov, Halei Chachara Rov. Whenever you have a competition between Rov and Karov, you go after Rov. Doesn't this bright already tell you that information? He says, V'yesh Lamar, the Kamashlan Afilu B'Kurva D'Mukhukha. So that Rabbi Chanina adds an additional dimension, which is not just when it's closer to the non-kosher butcher store, but even when it's Mukhukha, that it's Karov. Meaning that's on the path that's coming out of the butcher store. And so, in all likelihood, it would have come from that butcher store because it's on that path. It's not just that it's distance-wise, it's closer to that store. It's on the path that exits from that butcher store. Nevertheless, that karov is not meaningful, and rov governs. Now, in terms of statistics and probability, there really should be no difference between kol deparish, miruba kaparish, versus kol dekavua, kamechsa, amechsa, dami. There should be no distinction between these two items. Because in probability-wise, if you went and purchased meat, and you had to purchase from one of the stores, you don't remember which store you purchased it from, it should be dictated by the probabilities, which are the row of the stores are kosher, and there's one non-kosher store, as well as when the meat is found away from the stores, that same probability as it came from the majority of stores that are there. Now, the Rabbeinu Chananel makes the suggestion that the difference stems from the fact that the people, when they go to buy meat, they usually go to the cheapest store to buy meat. And the non-kosher store would have been the cheapest store in this situation, because nevela is always cheaper than kosher meat. So if you don't remember where you went, we're going to attribute the fact that you went to the non-kosher store as the likelihood, because that's the cheapest store. Even though, according to the Rach's logic, then when you find it outside the stores on the ground, why didn't it fall from one of the buyers? And if the buyers are the determining factor that it is, kikavua kamexa mexa dummy, why doesn't that influence when you find it outside? Because it fell from one of the buyers. So the answer is that we view the item in its current state. We don't look at its history. We look at it in its current state, and the probabilities in the current state are that it came, kol deparish, miruba kol parish, irrespective of what buyers do, that would have been the governing factor with regards to kol kavua kamechsa mechsa dami. That's an interesting dynamic or a dimension that he adds to suggest why the kavua here is kamechsa mechsa. The truth is that this has application in other places, even when that is not necessarily true, that it's the cheapest. We do it in all sorts of situations. We say, kol de kavua, kamechsa mechsa dami, and then you'd have to come up with a reason in each situation why there's more likelihood in the kavua for something to happen. And that's just not true in many of the examples that the Gemara brings in Sanhedrin in regards to killing. In those situations, it doesn't make sense to say that the kavua should be different than the kol de parish. And Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, in his Kovet Shiurim, says it's a gzera takatuv. Just a halacha b'li taimo, that that's the way it is, that we view kol de kavua kamechsa mechsa dami, versus kol de parish miruba kol parish, we view as being something that is a probability that follows the rov. So in both cases, statistically, it should be the same. The rov should be the same. But the Torah distinguishes between things that are in fixed locations versus things that are separated away. And people try to give explanation to it, but in the end, it really seems like a gzeirat hakatub, because the explanations that say that when you separate away from a pool, then the probabilities are determined by the rove in the pool. But when you're looking at fixed objects, then you can't look at it as a pool. You have to look at it as a safek, did I or did I not do it? But in all honesty, it's the same thing, because even if you're making decisions, there were nine that were in favor of the kosher meat, one in favor of the non-kosher meat. Why should it be that we view it as a 50-50 shot? So that's anyway, that's just in terms of the background of that. But nevertheless, here we have a situation in which you have a rove, and we're claiming that the rove is considered to be like a vadai. We let you eat the meat that you find on the ground, even though it comes from a rove. So that says rove we're treating like vadai. So what's Rabbi Yochanan telling us? Well, there are only three cases like that. So my answer is Tuma Kamrinan, Isra Lo Kamrinan. Rabbi Yochanan is saying in the world of Tuma that these are only three cases where we do that. In the world of Isur, in Okanami, there are other cases where we go rove and treat it like Vadai. So he says, Vaika Tesha Svardayim, Besheretz Echad. What about the case where you have nine Svardayim, which are not Mitamei? Because Svardaya is not one of eight Shratzim that are Mitamei when they are dead. Besheretz Echad, and one of the eight Shratzim that is dead there. So you have nine things that don't convey Tuma. One item that does convey Tuma. But Nagah Be'achad Me'em. He touched one of them. Ve'nu Yodeh Be'ez Me'en Nagah. He doesn't know which one he touched. Rishuta Yachid, Sveiko Tame. If it's in Rishuta Yachid, even though it's a Sveik, we deem it to be Tame. Because called Sveik, Tuma, Rishuta Yachid, is considered to be Tame. We learned that out from Sota. Because Sota teaches us that just like there, and it uses the term Tuma for the woman, when she's Nisteret, when she is secluded with an individual, we deem her as have to been committing the adulterous act, even though she was only just secluded, because we have a safek, tuma, reshut ayachid, it has to be reshut ayachid, otherwise it wouldn't be nisteret, it wouldn't be something where she's secluded. Yet we treat her as if she's badai, an adulteress, and that's why she has to bring her a korban sota, drink the mei sota, in order to release herself from that situation. So that's how we know, kol tuma reshut ayachid, sveko tamei, reshut arabim, when it's a public venue, sveko tahor, for the same reason, which is by sota, which is the principle by which we learn that Safek Tuma is Tamei, is only a situation where it's secluded in Rishut Yachid. If it was Rishut Rabim, there wouldn't be any Stira. And so therefore, in Rishut Rabim, Sveiko is Tahor. So in a case where it's a Safek, where he came into contact with the item, then we say, Kol Dekavua Kamechsa Mechsa Domi. And since the Sheretz and the Tzvadiim are all fixed in place, our Safek is which one of them you touch. So then we look at Kol Kavua Kamechsa Mechsa Domi. And if it is 50-50, then we have a safek tuma, and then it's governed by the rules, which is safek tuma b'shute yachid, it is tamei. If it is b'shute rabim, then it is tahor. Ubenimtza, if one of these items moved away, so you have these 9 tzvadim in 1 sheretz, and then one of those items separated away to another place, and is no longer discernible, whether it's a tzvardeya or a sheretz, and an individual came into contact with that item, there we say they are tahor, because then it's not kavu anymore. That's called the parish. Miruba ka parish. And we have to assume that it was a tzvardeya that came away from the grouping, and therefore when you touched it, you touched something that was tahor, and will consider you to be tahor. So again here, you have rov, which is that the rov was tzvardeya, and we're treating it as if your vadai touched the tzvardeya, not a sheretz, and you are tahor. So then why isn't this another case that Rabbi Yochanan should have brought down? My answer is, Tuma di shak amrinan, Tuma ba'alma lo kamrinan. We're speaking about Tuma by a woman, not Tuma in general. In the case, of course, of Mekor, we're dealing with a woman. In the case with Shilya Katicha, we're dealing with a woman that's giving birth. So all of those are classified as Tuma Isha. And since it's Tuma Isha, that's why Rabbi Yochanan consolidated those and said these are the 3 instances where we treat rov kivadai, not other instances. There are other instances in tuma and other instances in isur, but not by tumat ishas. Other tuma and isur, yes, you have rov kivadai, but we're speaking about the narrow cases of tumat isha. Here, Rabbi Yochanan says there are only 3 instances where we treat rov kivadai. Vayika, okay. Even now, when you narrow it down to that, we still have this case. Hadam Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says Avra benar. She crossed a river, the Nipila, and she miscarried. Mevia korban, she brings a korban leida, the ne'echal, and the kohanim can eat it. Haleich achar rov nashim, go after the majority of women, rov nashim vlad ma'alya yalda. And most women give birth to a entity that would have been a viable entity, or it is an entity that's classified as a leida, and therefore she has to bring a korban for her leida. Now, a korban that's brought for a leida, one of the animals that's brought is a bird that is a chatat. And that bird that's a chatat gets malika. So now, if you have a safek, then you can't eat it because then it is nevela. Because if you're wrong about that, then you did malika on it. That's not a proper shkita. It's nevela, and the kohanim are eating nevela. That's what happens. Whenever you have a safek leida, we say bring the korban because you can bring the olah. Irrespective, because it could be a nidava, even if you don't need it for leida. But the chatat, you bring a chatat of, and chatat of is one korban chova that's allowed to be brought on a safek. And that's because none of it goes on the mizbeach besides the dam. So we allow you to do the malika and the matnot dam. And then, if it is a korban that's supposed to be brought and we know badai that you have to bring it, the kohanim can eat it. But if it's the safek, then they put it in that little window as we spoke about on the ramp of the mizbeach. And they let it to bar tzurata, it loses its form, and then they burn it as a psulei hamukdashim. But that's only true by a chatat ov, and it's true in situations where you have a safek, like here, by a safek leida. Shuman Levi comes along and says here, the woman going through the river that miscarried, she can bring her korban, And we considered it as if it was a vadai leidan, the Kohanim can eat it. Doesn't even look at it as a safek. We never saw what she gave birth to. The possibility wasn't something that makes her chayevet in a kurban leidan. Yet he treats a rove in vadai. So isn't that exactly what we're looking for? Rabbi Yochanan says, oh, we have a rove ki vadai by tumat isha. That's exactly what we're dealing with here. It's leida, isha, tumat leida, and kurbanot leida. All of that meets filter that Rabbi Yochanan put. And yet we're saying here, rov kivadai, and he didn't quote it as one of the cases. My answer is, that's not a problem. Matnitin ki aminan shmatita lo kaminan. Rabbi Yochanan speaking in Tanaic works, he's not speaking about Omoraim that brought something down. The things that Rabbi Yochanan quoted were Mishnayot and Braitot. So there are three, either Mishnayot or Braitot, there they make a rov kivadai. Yes, Rabbi Shuman Levi's case is also rov kivadai, even by Tumat Isha, but it's Shmaita, that's a memra from Rabbi Shuman Levi, it's an Amora. And Rabbi Yochanan wasn't addressing issues from Amoraim. Ba'akiyata Ravin, when Ravin came, Amar Meiti Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Chanina challenged Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi's position, Toa, from the case of Toa, which we're going to get to further on in the Masechta, V'leyadana Maiti Yuvtei. And I don't even know what the question is from his bringing of Toa. Toa is a case where a woman leaves us pregnant and comes back empty, meaning that she's no longer pregnant. So something happened between the time she left and the time she came back. We have no idea, and neither does she. She does not remember what happened, and she doesn't remember when it happened. The question is, then, what's the state of this woman in terms of her returning to her husband to be Torah for her husband? She has no idea what happened to her. And then when she came to us, she has 3 weeks in which she is Torah, where she has no sighting of Dom. And then for the next 10 weeks, she has on and off weeks where she sees Dom for 1 week, doesn't see Dom the second week, 1 week sees, 1 week doesn't see. That's the scenario that we're posed with, and we have to figure out, when is she Torah the Bala? So over there, the Brayta says, on the 35th day, which means at the end of the 5th week, she is Torah the Bala. And that is because Mimonov Shach, she Torah at that point. That was brought as a question against Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, because according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, there should have been a Vadai Leida over here. And if it's a Vadai Leida, then why is it that by the Torah, you have to wait until the 5th week? Why isn't she ready Torah in the 4th week? And that is because the maximum that you could have in this situation is a Leidat Nikeva, or Leidat Zachar, because according to him it's Vadai Leida, and a Zachar would be 1 week of Tuma, and then 33 days of Tahara, and a female would be 2 weeks of Tuma, and then 66 days of Tahara, or Dam Tohar. So now, in the 4th week already, according to this, you would definitely be Tehora Lebala, because even though you're seeing Dam in the 4th week, that Dam is Dam Tohar, according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Because irrespective of whether she had a Zachar or a Nekeva, she still is able to be Tahor at that point in time. Because even if she was Yoledet Bezov, which means that she's a Zavagdola, and she gave birth to a Zachar or a Nekeva, so you complete the 1 week of Tumah for Zachar, 2 weeks of Tumah for a Nekeva, 1 week of no sighting, where she's now Torah from being a Zavagidola. That's 3 weeks of elapsed. In the 4th week, even though she's seeing Dam, it shouldn't matter. That Dam is Dam Leida. And whether it was a Zachar or Nekeva, that Dam Leida is Dam Tohar. According to Rabbi Shuman Levi, already in the 4th week, you should have been able to be together with her husband. Yet, by Toah, we say she's only a Mutayat to be with her husband after the 5th week. So that shows you that we don't necessarily believe that she had a Vadai Leida. Because there's a possibility, there's a 4th thing that's involved. We only gave 3 things that were possible. Leidat Zachar, Leidat Nekeva, and she was Yoledet Bezov. All of those are possible according to Rabbi Shuman Levi. The one thing that's not possible according to Rabbi Shuman Levi is that she had no Leida at all. It was a Leida Torah, because it wasn't a viable entity. It was before the time that it was classified as a fetus that is considered to be a Leida. And then she is Torah Legamre. That's the case when she sees Dom in her 4th week, she's a Nida. That's why she can't be together with her husband in that 4th week when she sees Dom, is because she's a Nida, and you have to wait until the 5th week. According to Rabbi Shuman Levi, that's not a possibility. So that's the question from Toa on Rabbi Shuman Levi. And Kenyate Rabin says that was the question Rabbi Shuman, Rabbi Chanina asked on him. And he says, and I have no idea why this is a question on him.
So the reason that it's not a question is because Eino Chanami, had she given birth the day before she came back, yeah, on the fourth week, she should have been able to mutar the Baala. The only problem is, we don't know when she gave birth. And there's a possibility now that she's already past the days of Yimei Tahara, and she's in Nida now, and that's why she can't be together with her husband on the fourth week when she has a sighting of Dam, is because maybe she's in Nida now. And that, even with Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, that still doesn't make it that you would be Tahora on that week. Because even if you believe Vadai that she gave birth to a viable entity, and she had a Leida, that Leida could have been 3 weeks before she saw us. And that means she's already passed her Yemei Tohar, and what she's seeing now is a Petach Lenida. And that's why she can't be together, and that's why it's not a question on him. And that's why you have to wait until the end of the fifth week, because you need 7 days of Tahara to clear up whatever Dam was seen in that fourth week. My love, what would I have thought? Lo tiyufta elisiyato. It's not a tiyufta, it's not a question on him, but Rabbi believes it's actually a support for him. If it was not for Rabbi Shua ben Levi, and we didn't think it was a vadai leida, it turns out it is a sfeik sfeika. Turns out to be a double sfeik, because imar ruach ipila, is a sfeik whether she actually gave birth to something that's considered a birth or not considered a birth. And even if you say that she gave birth, maybe she gave birth long before she came back to us. Maybe she gave birth 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, and none of this has to do with Tumat HaLeida. If that's the case, then why should she be Tmeya at all? We should assume that she is Tohra the Gamre. And even though, without all of this, Avagav Dublav Haki Tosfot says Ika Kama Sfeikot, there are plenty of Sfeikot here. Maybe it's a Zachar, maybe it's a Nekeva. Maybe she didn't give birth with Zob. There are tons of Sfeikot over here. Nevertheless, the Kol Malkom, he elected the Rabbi Yeshua. If Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi doesn't exist here, he got Sfeik Acher Yoter. De'ema lo yalda klal. There is like the ultimate Sfeik, which is maybe she didn't give birth at all. It's not classified as a Leida at all. If that's the case, it's a Sfeik Sfeika. And why do you have to wait until the fifth week? We should have been Matir her much earlier. So the reason that we wait until the fifth week is because we had in Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. And Rabbi Shulman Levi says that she was Vadai Leida. So you took away one of the Sfeikot, or one of the key Sfeikot, which is, was there a Leida or wasn't there a Leida? So now there is a Leida for sure, then you've narrowed down the Sfeikot, and because of that, you have to wait until the fifth week in order to be Torah. Had it not been for Rabbi Shulman Levi, it would have been a Sfeik Sfeika, and because it's a Sfeik Sfeika, we should have made her Torah the Gamre throughout this thing, because we don't even know if she should be Tmeya at all. So even though there are many Sfeikot left, still Rabbi Shulman Levi eliminates one of the major Sfeikot, and that's why over there you have to wait until the fifth week. Because for him, you've eliminated that one possibility that she was Tohra the Gamre and gave birth to nothing. Whereas according to everybody else who thinks that is not the case, then you have a pretty significant Sfeik here, which makes it into a Sfeik Sfeika, and then why do you have to wait until the fifth week in order to be Tohra the Baala? So if that's the case, now I have a brighter Toah that is backing up this position of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Because Rabin says, I don't even think it's a question. I think it's even a proof to his position. Then you would have a brayta supporting Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, and Rabbi Yochanan should have quoted that as one of the cases where we go rove that is considered to be vadai. Lo, dilma lo tiyufta lo siyata. Maybe in the end it's not a proof to him, and it's not a question on him. That is because of the fact, as Tosfo pointed out, the Balav Achaika Sfeika Tuva. Plenty of Sfeikot here. V'asrinan. Despite the fact that it's a Sfeik Sfeika, we still say it's a Sur. And therefore, if even without Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, even if you enter another Sfeik into the puzzle, maybe it would still be a Sur. Because even with Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, who says there was a Vadai Leida, you still have enough Sfeikot here. Zachar, Nekeva, was she Yoledet B'Zov? Now Yoledet B'Zov? And maybe she gave birth 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, before she ever saw us. Who said it was the day she came back, right before we saw her, that she gave birth? That's enough Sfeikot there, and yet we're still saying it's Asur. Then why should it bother us that we had one more Sfeik without Rabbi Shimon Levi? We're not sure if she gave birth to an entity or not an entity. Even without that, you have plenty of Sfeikot. So just add in one more Sfeik, it'd still be Asur. It's not because of Rabbi Shimon Levi that he was waiting till the fifth week to be Tahor Lebala. Right, so the Gemara says, okay, then Lemute Mai. Rabbi Yochanan, we now have established as these three cases that are uniquely Rov Tivadai, in cases of Mishnayot and Braitot, in the world of Tumat Isha. That's what he's told us. Now, why did he tell us only three? that says that there are others that don't go that way. What are those others that don't go that way? And that's what the Gemara says here, the mutei mai. Why does it come to exclude? If it comes to exclude a robe whereby there's a chazaka with it doesn't mean in the same direction, it means opposing it. There's a chazaka that opposes it, delo sarfina aleyat truma. That there you don't sarif the truma. Ha amra Rabbi Yochanan charazimna. We already have that from Rabbi Yochanan in another situation. Tosafot already says, wait a minute. In all the three cases that we brought, the woman has a chezkat tahara. Since she has a chezkat tahara, why don't we say over there, you see, despite the fact that she has a chezkat tahara, the robe governs, even though there's an opposing chazaka. Yet we still are sorefet ha-truma. The Tosafot over here says there's a difference between the three cases we brought and the case we're about to bring. It says, that the one case we're about to bring here is a case of a rove where it's not a true rove. But the other three where he brought it, it was a real rove over there. Or maybe even in those three instances, it wasn't a rove gamur. Or the other distinction is that in those three instances, the undermining of the chazaka comes from the robe itself or from the item that has the chazaka in it. So I'm going to explain this, but this is important in understanding the case that we're about to bring. Tosafot wants to know the case we're about to bring, how is it distinct from that which we said before? It's not. Tinok, hanimsa b'tzad ha'isa. Find a young child next to a piece of dough, or large thing of dough. Upatsek biyado. And sure enough, in his hands, he's playing around with dough. There's the dough over there, and there's the dough in his hand. Rabbi Meir mitaher. Rabbi Meir says, the dough that he's not touching, that's not in his hands, is tahor. Ve'chachamim mitamim. And the chachamim on the other hand say it's tamei. Shedarko shel tinok litapeach. Because it's common for tinokot to touch things, to tap things, to get messy, and get involved with things. Ve'amrinan. And over there we say, my time in the Rabbi Meir. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Meir's position? Kasavar, rov tinokot mitapchim. Majority of tinokot touch things. Miut ein mitapchim. There's a minority that don't. Visazu b'cheskat tahara omeret. And the Isa has a chazaka being tahor, because until now we didn't know there was any tumah with it. It has a cheskat tahara. Samuch miut al chazaka. Add the miut to the chazaka, the each relay ruba, and then the robe is overwhelmed or overrun. And the way Rashi says it, it's two against one. You have miut, and you have chazaka, and then you have robe on the other side. And miut and chazaka are two items that are stronger than the one item, which is robe. And therefore it will override, and that's why it's tahor. Rabbanan have a view that miuta kemandalete dami. The minority is as if it doesn't exist. The ruba of a chazaka. And when you have competition between a rove and a chazaka, ruba odif. Rove is considered to be adif. It's considered to be better. So first of all, we have to determine what the scenario is. Machlok at Rashi in the Balei Tosafot as to what the scenario is. The scenario according to Rashi is that we assume the child touched a sheretz. And a sheretz is tamei. And the child is almost definitely tamei because darko shotinoch litapeach. It's normal for a child to touch things, and therefore a la rove, the tinok is going to be tamei because he touched a sheretz. So that's the rove that we're dealing with here. In terms of the isa, he definitely touched the isa because he has isa in his hands, and there's an isa over there, so he definitely came into contact with the isa. So we know he came into contact with the isa, which is not sure if he was tamei, but a la rove, he touches things, and likelihood he touched the sheretz, therefore it's all likelihood he is tamei. That's the way Rashi views the case, that the mitapchim is referencing to the shretzim, that they touch and they get messy and they get involved with things. Therefore, ala rov, the tinok is tamei, he vadai touched the dough. And that's what the machloket Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim is. Rabbi Meir is choshesh the mi'uta. Rabbi Meir says when there's a rove and a mi'ut, the mi'ut doesn't disappear. The mi'ut still has standing. It may not have its own standing, but we're choshesh for it. So now that you're choshesh for a mi'uta, if you add that to the chazaka, that the dough was tahor, the isa was tehorah until now, then the miut plus the chazaka make it that it's stronger than the robe of tinokot to touch things that are tamei. Then the chachamim view miut command the later dummy. When you have a robe and a miut, it's as if the miut doesn't exist at all. And therefore it's only as if the robe's there. It's robe versus chazaka. Robe wins. That's the way Rashi explains it. The Baal Tosafot disagree for a number of reasons, part of which is to make the case relevant to what Rabbi Yochanan said. We said before Rabbi Yochanan is only addressing issues with Tumat Isha. What does this case have to do with Tumat Isha whatsoever, according to Rashi? There's nothing relevant to Tumat Isha. So Tosafot gives an alternate explanation based on the Rabbeinu Tam, and through that he brings in relevance to the case here, which is that the question is whether the tinok touched the dough or did not touch the dough. Because rov tinokot metapchim. Ala rov, the babies touch everything that's in their purview, anything that they can, they'll touch. And so in all likelihood, the reason he has dough in his hands is because he took from the bigger dough, and that means that he touched the dough. But that's the rov. The rov is tinokot touched dough. The miut, maybe the dough in his hands. Somebody gave it to him to play with. He had another piece that came from somewhere else. Whatever the reason is, there's a miut that he didn't touch that big piece of dough that we're wondering about, whether it's tamei or tor. As far as the baby is concerned, he's badai tamei. The reason he's badai tamei is either because he touched shratzim, like Rashi said, but more so because women hug babies all the time. And that means that in all likelihood he was hugged by a nida. Because women are nidot on a regular basis, and women love to hold babies and hug babies. So in all likelihood, this baby is tamei, because between the shvatzim and the women that are nidot, it's 100% certainty that he is tamei. So now you have a baby that's vadai tamei, and the safek is whether he touched the dough or didn't touch the dough. That's the mitapchim part. Did he touch it or did he not touch it? Ala rov, he touched it. So now, according to the chachamim, we don't look at the miut of chance that he didn't touch it. We ignore that. That's rov versus chazaka. The chazaka is that that dough is Torah. The rov is that Al Rov, the baby, touched it. And we're going to view the Rov as if it governs against a Chazaka over here. And then it's for sure he touched it. And he's Tamei, so for sure it's Tamei now. Now that, according to Rabbi Meir, we're koshish for the miut of babies that don't touch. But then we add that to the Chazaka that the dough is Tohorah. And then together those override the Rov, which is that Rov babies touch the dough. And according to Rabbi Meir, it would be considered Tahor. Now, what does that have to do with our case over here? That's where Tosfa brings in, according to the Rabbi Butam, because the reason the baby is tamei is because nidot migafafototo, the nidot hug him, then this is tumat isha. The reason the baby is tamei is because the fact that women hug the baby. So then we consider this, so we'll classify this as also being tumat isha. That's how Tosfa solves that problem, and that's the way he explains it. Now, the only problem with that is, and it is a problem for Rashi as well, which is Kasha, the Perek Bachi Vimotum are Sumuch Miut to the Chazaka, Vavle Pagol Paga. According to Rabbi Meir, when you add the Miut to the Chazaka against the Rove, it becomes like 50-50. Don't we hold that Safek Tumah B'Shut Yachid is Tameh? So over here, in this instance, why do we consider it or classify it as it to be Tahor? Even if you classify it as being 50-50, why don't you say that 50-50 is Tameh? Not 50-50 is Tahor. It's a Safek. Safek, Meshuta Yachid is Tamei. So Tosfot answers for Rabbi Meir. Yishlamar, Dahachi, Itra Hacha Ruba. Over here, the robe is weakened. Yishum Tinok, Avi Davar, Shein Badato, Lishael. Because the Tinok has a factor that is important when it comes to Sfekot in Meshuta Yachid that we consider them to be Tamei. And that is that the Din of Sotah, as we've learned earlier already, is only true when it's Data Lishael. When you have something that you can ask questions to, it's something that has the ability to be discerning and to give you information. Even though they themselves may not have the information that you need, the mere fact that she has information is important. The case of Sotah is clear. The woman knows whether the adulterous act happened or not happened. And even though she may not tell us or disclose that to us, she knows that information. So from that, Chazal say that Sveko Tamei B'Shuter Yachid is only true when it's something that's Datol Yishael. Datol Yishael is a qualification, even if they don't know the information. And that's enough to put you in this world of Datol Yishael. But here, the Tinok is ain't Datol Yishael. You can't ask them a question. And since you can't ask them a question, so then you don't have the Gzeret HaKatuv of Sotah, which tells you that any Safek Tumah B'Shuter Yachid is Tamei. And therefore here, it is a much weaker Palgo. And that's why we lean to the Tahor side and not to the Tamei side when it is Mechsa Mechsa.
Then if it's about ask of here, isn't Rabbi Meir choshesh the miyuta? If he's choshesh the miyuta, why do you need a chazaka? When Rabbi Meir is choshesh the miyuta, he makes it like a 50-50. The miyut gets extra weight, and that extra weight makes it as if it's 50-50 over here. Why do you need the chazaka to back the miyut? So the Bayit Tosfot in the end say, the Ri says that nakat chazaka ba de miyuta lishmir the chazaka ena misayeh the rov. The reason I told you the chazaka helps the miyut is to tell you that it's not helping the rov. That all it's telling you is that the rov is the rov alone, and it's up against the miyut. But the chazakas is on the side of the miyut, so therefore, it's not helping the rov. But the miyut by itself could have stood by itself, according to Rabbi Meir. Just telling you the information about the chazaka to tell you that it's not hurting the miyut, it's actually in line with the miyut. Because Rabbi Meir has a view that he's choshesh the miyut. He's choshesh for probabilities that are in the minority. But he's not choshesh the miyuta de miyuta. It's a far-fetched probability. He's not choshesh for it. So now, if the chazaka helped the rove, it would make the miyut into a miyuta de miyuta. And if it was a miyuta de miyuta, even Rabbi Meir would agree. So it's only telling us the chazaka is on the side of the miyut to tell us it's not on the side of the rove. Because had it been on the side of the rove, that would have made it miyuta de miyuta. And even Rabbi Meir would agree that you're tamei over here. The reason Rabbi Meir doesn't say that is because the chazaka is on the side of the miyut. Therefore, the minority position remains a significant minority. And therefore, he's choshesh the miyuta and makes it into a 50-50 shot. And in a 50-50 shot, you would say that it is tahor, even though generally with 50-50 you would say it's tameh. Over here you say it's tahor because the robe is not a strong robe. And that's a recurring theme that the Bayit Tosfot bring over here, that the robe over here is not a strong robe, or because tinok ain't that totally shael. So because of those two weaknesses, we do say in a 50-50 case, it is tahor according to Rabbi Meir. Now, for the Rabbonon, the Gemara in Kiddushin says that we treat a tinok like dato lishael. Tosfot says, why did you need that? According to the Chachamim over here, the rov governs over here. The miut doesn't exist. It's rov versus chazaka. Why does the fact that the tinok is dato lishael, what does that add over here in terms of the Chachamim's position? Because afilu ain't bo dat lishael, even if it doesn't have dat lishael, he would be tamei even reshut rabim according to the Chachamim, because the rov governs over the chazaka. It's not a 50-50 shot over here that we're trying to determine. So why did the Chachamim have to add in this extra idea that mid rabbanan we treat the tinok like that dato lishael? The Tosfot answers, Omer Rabbeinu Tam, the rov tinokot, inu rov gamur. This rov over here is not a full rov. This goes back to what we discussed before. The law of ikineged chazaka ka palgo palgo. Therefore, it only weighs in as 50-50 against the chazaka. And then mina Torah, in Rishut Rabim, it would have been Tahor. That's why we have to consider the baby as if that totally shell. They changed it from being a weak rove into a full-fledged rove, at least midrabanan. So this goes back to what we discussed before, that maybe this case is a weaker rove than the other cases we spoke about. And that's important because now, Vamaresh Lakish, Mishumar Boshaya, Zoe Chazakash, Sofim Leata Truma. This case here in the Mishnah that we just quoted by the Tinok Mitapeach, that's considered, we treat it like a robe, that's a vadai, and you're soreif truma on this tuma that the Rabbanan say. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, ain't zu chazaka, shusofin aleta truma. This is not a strong enough chazaka. I mean, it's not a strong enough robe that we consider as if it is vadai truma. Already now over here, you have this information from this Mishnah that when you have a case of robe versus chazaka opposing it, but there we say that the robe is strong enough to win and say that Sveko Tamei, but it's not strong enough to make it into Tuma Vadait. So we learned that information from this Mishnah. And again, the Bayit Tosfot asked, the three cases we brought before were also cases where there was a Chazaka opposing. And even though there was a Chazaka opposing, we still said that there you treat it like a Vadai and you're Sorefit. So then why is this case any different than the cases we brought before? And why then, Yochan over here says it's a Safek Tuma and not a Vadai Tuma? So Tosfot gave two answers, one of which was that the rov over here, rov in the tinok mitapchim, is not a full-fledged rov. It's a much weaker rov. And that's what Tosfot just said again here to answer why the Chachamim need this extra boost to say that the tinok, we treat him like dato lishael, is because rov itself is not strong enough to overcome the chazaka and it would be a 50-50 case. And that's what's different between the rov that we discussed in the other three cases where it overrides chazaka vadai. Whereas over here, the robe does not override it, vadai. The other thing Tosfot said is that the difference between the three cases before in this case is how you undermine the chazaka. Over there, by the three cases, the chazaka is undermined by the riuta itself. The woman has a chezkat tahara. But now, the
the leida, the sighting of dam that took place, are coming from her goof. They're coming from her body itself. And so therefore the safek that arises out of the thing that we consider to have the chazokah. Her body that has a cheskat hara is also the producer of the riuta, the thing that is negating the chazokah. And even by the shulya, which is found in the house, you're undermining the cheskat hara of the house because of the fact that the shulya is lefaneinu. It's right there in the house itself. And that issue is causing the riuta in the chazokah. In that case, the robe takes on much more strength because the robe not only is a robe in terms of determinants, it's also a robe that weakens the chazokah. Whereas over here, by the tinok v'tapkim, the two have nothing to do with each other. At least according to the way that the Balei Tosafot explained the case here. That robe, tinokot, touched the dough. Has nothing to do with the cheskat tahara of the dough that's there. They're independent issues. One issue is the tinok and the other one is the dough. And so because of that, the robe here cannot override the chazokah, because the robe is a separate mitigating factor to the chazokah. It's not something that derives out of the chazokah itself. And that makes it different than the cases we brought before. And that's why over here this case is unique, or why Rabbi Yochanan has a different view in this case, and not in the three cases that we had before. And even though this is differentiated from those three cases, we don't need the three cases to tell us that this is different, because Rabbi Yochanan over here explicitly tells us that it's different and says it's only Tamei Misafek. So now the Gemara continues and says, all right, Ela Lemiute Ruba de Rabbi Yehuda. Must be that Rabbi Yochanan's three cases are coming to exclude the case of Rabbi Yehuda, which is the Tanan. Hamapelet Chaticha, someone gives birth to a chunk of something. Im Yeshima Dam Tmeya. If it has Dam with it, then it is Tmeya. Vim Lav, if it does not have Dam with this chunk, then it's Tehora. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ben Kach Ben Kach Tmeya. Rabbi Yehuda says, either way, it is Tmeya. So now, when she discharges this chunk, that doesn't have any tsurani shape to it. Leida, for sure she didn't have here, because it's just a chunk of something that doesn't have any shape to it, so it's definitely not a leida. The Mishnah says that if it has dam with it, then the woman is tmeya like a nida. What we could think is that it's coagulated blood that she's discharging. So as long as there's dam on it, then we assume that that's dam nida, and she's considered to be a nida. If there's no dam on it, then we consider it to be something that was a discharge that is Tohor. So, Bama Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Lo Timei Rabbi Yehuda, Elo B'chaticha, Shel Arba Minei Damim. He only was mitamei when this chunk that was discharged has a coloring like the four types of dam that are considered to be tameim. That's the Mishnah that we're going to start tomorrow's daf with. The Mishnah says, there are five types of blood that are tameim. And here the Gemara says four. The reason is because one of those colors is black, and black, as the Mishnah is going to tell us, is red, that just went bad. Dark and red or a bad red. So there are really only four types, but nevertheless, it's five in the end because of the shachor. So only if this chunk has a coloring of one of the damim that is tameim. Vashamine damim Torah. Even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that if it's any one of the other colored damim that are like yarok and sahov that are considered to be dam tohar, then if it has that color, it's also considered to be tohor. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Shel Arba Minei Damim, Divrei Akol Tmeya. Yochanan says, if it's one of the four types of dam, everybody, I mean the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda agree that it's Tamei, even if there's no other blood on it. Shel Shar Damim, Divrei Akol Torah. And again, if this chunk has other damim that are not the color of the damim that are Tmeim, everybody agrees it's Torah. Lo Nechleku Elashi Pila, Ve'ene Yodat Mahi Pila. They only argue about a case where she discharged the chunk, and we don't know what the chunk is. So again, it's not a leida because we know it doesn't have its tzura with it. But she lost the chunk, so we can't see what the color was. So he says, go after the majority of these chunks that are discharged, which is usually coagulated dam, and it's coagulated dam from the four colors that are tameim. Ala robe, the woman discharges dam, that is dam tameh, because it's coming from the uterus. And that's our expectations, and therefore the dam that's discharged, in all likelihood, is that. Rabbanan Saveh, Zil Batarov Chatichot, Lo Amrinan. We don't go after the robe. So you see there that Rabbi Yehuda says we go after the robe, and the robe of the damim that are exiting is dam tamei, and the robe of chunks that come out that are hardened or coagulated blood are from dam, that is the color that is tamei. Since we don't have it here, we're going to go follow the robe. So over there, you would have thought when we say we follow the robe, that means that it's kivadai. And therefore, its robe is tmei'ah, and it's Vadai Tmeah, and you have to be Sorek the Tuma. That's what Rabbi Yochanan comes to say. That Shita of Rabbi Yehuda is only Rov, but not Kivadai. It's still a Safek Tuma, and you don't burn it. So the other three cases he gave us, we treat the Rov like Vadai, and you burn Tuma, and you're considered to be Vadai Tmeah. If you enter into the Mikdash, you're going to be Chayav a Korban. All those things we consider to be Vadai. This case, we have a robe also, we make it Tameh. Here the robe remains as a Safek, and it wouldn't be Vadai Tuma, and that's what Rabbi Yochanan's statement comes to exclude. He brought Mishnayot and Braitot that have robe Kivadai, and here's a case of a Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda says the robe is Kivadai, and that robe Kivadai is not like Vadai Vadai, it's a robe Kivadai that remains as a Safek Tuma. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan came to exclude, is this Rabbi Yehuda's Shita, to tell you it doesn't mean robe Kivadai, but rather, it's a fake tuma and not badai tuma over here. Okay, we're starting the Mishnah on the top of Yutet Amud Aleph.